Good morning.
Good morning.
And welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I don't know if we have any visitors or guests this morning. Just in case we do, I want them to know that we have a spot later on in our program for new folks or visiting people to introduce themselves. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, your sexual orientation, your gender identification, your family structure, no matter your age, your abilities, or your inabilities, you are welcome here. We do provide a variety of services. They're not all the same. Sometimes I do the service, sometimes people from within the congregation do it, and sometimes we have outside speakers, so we always urge you to come more than once. This morning, among other things, we are celebrating the life of Unitarian minister Norbert Fabian Chopek. These words are his words, these opening words, written on the eve of World War II. It is in our hands to use life and to adorn it with divine beauty and the light of immortality. But what do? We fill life with quarrels, animosity, tears, and vanities. What keeps us from creating a new world? We have invented the airplane. We have discovered the North Pole. But the most important thing is missing. That we might discover ourselves, that we might know ourselves and the meaning of our existence. Holly, would you please light the chalice so we have some more warmth in the room? We stand at the edge of summer. The sun has at last warmed us enough that we begin to trust in its presence. The last burst of spring blossoms, lavender and white, and deep pink banks of rhododendron are giving way to summer peony and roses. O source of the turning seasons, of earth, of life, of promise gradually becoming fulfillment, may your people find a lightening of the burdens with the brightening of the sky. And here are some words from Norbert Chopek. He writes, and he wrote this in 1911. We are not leading a fight just against evil, but also for positive work. We prefer building to destroying. We do not favor dogmas. They are lifeless formulas. Freedom, that's something we get enthusiastic about. Let's free ourselves from superstition and prejudice, and then truth in full beauty will appear. Let us inscribe on our banner freedom of conscience, and let us win battles with it everywhere. Reason. That's a big word, but only a few know what reason truly means. Many know the phrase, but don't themselves really think. Tell me, who is the greater? Someone who knows a lot or the person who knows how to think? Not only to think, but to act independently and responsibly. He wrote this in 1911 when he was a Baptist minister. He didn't know anything about Unitarianism yet. His spiritual journey is absolutely fascinating. Once he became a Unitarian minister, he wrote this for the First Flower Communion, but he didn't call it communion, the First Flower Festival. We are trying to find new expressions of our religious life very slowly and carefully, and by we, he means this group of people who aren't really sure what Unitarianism is in Czechoslovakia, but they're searching for something. Whereas the dedication of a child, weddings, and burials were kept rather close to the general Unitarian custom, we have made a new experiment in symbolizing our liberty and brotherhood in a service, talking about the flower service, which was so powerful and impressive that I never experienced anything like it. The most dry and rationalistic members were moved, and many an eye brightened through tears. And then he goes on to say a little bit about what else he did in that first flower festival. And then he lets his congregation know that the flowers then were removed from the building and taken some to a wedding hall and used for a wedding, and they're brought back and used again at the Unitarian Church. Then the flowers were brought back to the old place to make access easy for everybody. After all these experiences, nobody dares to say anymore that we are so rationalistic as to have nothing for the heart. I've talked about CHOPEC before, and I suspect many of you weren't here then. This was years ago, or you won't remember. But I think it's important to keep his memory alive, so I'm going to give you a sketch of his life. We could spend a lot of time on CHOPEC, but I hardly know where to begin with a figure like him. He was one of those larger-than-life people, way, way, way ahead of his time. I would say that he's still way, way ahead of the times, human times, that is. What keeps us from creating a new world? CHOPEC asked. He asked that question in the late 1930s, and all of you should know what was happening in Europe in the late 1930s. It was a very troubling time and becoming darker and darker. We're still trying to answer the question, what keeps us from creating a new world? I talked to our young people about some similarities between humans and flowers, but there are other similarities too. Flowers are fragile. So are we. But flowers are also tough. So are we. The life of a flower is fleeting, and so are our lives. Flowers are exuberant. By that I mean their colors and shapes are amazing, outlandish even. Flowers bring a smile to our faces when we pay attention to them. Flowers not only bring out exuberance in us, but also joyfulness. We need to be reminded that like flowers, we do have the capacity for exuberance and for joy. CHOPEC recognized this and the power of flowers to bring joy into our lives. Flowers can help us super rational Unitarian Universalists, more the Unitarian side, of course, be less rationalistic and get out of our heads. And that's a good thing sometimes. Not only that, but I believe it's a necessary aspect of being human, acting from our hearts as well as our heads. Many of you in this room will remember the flower power movement, the flower children. I don't know if calling that a movement is maybe giving them more due than was actually true. But do you remember that young woman who was trying to put a flower into the barrel of the gun, I think? And I think that had to have been in Haight-Ashbury.
Right here on campus, that's right.
Oh, it happened here too? Well, of course it probably happened here too. The second summer that I was here at Prairie, I planned a flower ceremony, and I heard a lot of muttering about and comments about how silly it was to bring a flower, put it with other flowers, pass them all around, and finally take a different one back with you home. What was the point? What possible good could come from such a ritual? And it is a ritual, a distinctly Unitarian ritual adopted by our Universalist congregations as well. I hope that this ritual will move you, will energize you, bring you joy, make you smile, give you hope that the power of love will triumph over the power of hate, As I wrote in the June edition of our Prairie Fire newsletter, flowers can be a symbol of defiance, a celebration of differences, a shout out for hope in an increasingly dark world, a reminder that there is much beauty in our world. So before we get to the sharing of the flowers part, I want to emphasize that Norbert Fabian Chopek did not use the word communion. I believe he referred to his ritual as one of these three things: the flower ceremony, the flower celebration, or my favorite, the flower festival. I used to be an optimist. I think of myself. 40 slip something. Optimistic person. It's getting more difficult. But after reading Norbert Fabian Chopek, A Spiritual Journey by Unitarian Minister Richard Henry, I don't know if a more optimistic person ever lived than Norbert Chopek. I should mention that Lee Haspel, one of Norbert Chopek's grandchildren, I remember the Chopeks had 8 or 9 children, so there's a lot of grandchildren out there. Lee is one of the grandsons, and he lives here in the Madison area with his wife, Sandy, and they are friends of Prairie Society. Lee, and I try to see them as often as I can, and he looks like Norbert. So here I am sitting in this house in Madison, and I'm talking to Norbert Chopek. Lee told me that the book to which I just referred is, and this is from Lee's opinion, formed by, of course, his memories, that there are a lot of errors in Richard Henry's book. But interestingly, another grandson, Ronald Frederick, I don't know him, has a blurb on the back of the cover of the paperback version of Henry's book, which contradicts what Lee has said to me. Masterful. The amount of research and effort is mind-boggling, and the book is a great read. My grandfather would approve, says Frederick, which is the opposite of what Lee has told me. But such is the way of families, right? There is the error, according to grandson Lee, around the use of that word communion, and I think that's true. And then a couple of months ago, the Unitarian Universalist Partner Church Council, the UUPCC, sent an email out to all congregations inviting us to join them in a worldwide celebration of the first ever flower festival, which the UUPCC said occurred in June of 1922, making this the 95th anniversary of that. Richard Henry's book says that the first ceremony was held in the summer of 1923. Despite all that, I think Henry's book tells a fascinating story that gets most of Chopek's life right. Chopek was full of joy. He wanted others to cultivate their capacity for joy. He had a wonderful sense of humor. Well, he had 11 children. So I think with 11 children, a sense of humor would be crucial. 6 with his first wife, 4 with his second wife, and 1 with his third wife. He was widowed twice. Fairly young. He moved to New Jersey with wife number 2, whose name was Maria. And I told the children that they moved to New Jersey because Chopek kept getting arrested in Europe. This woman died in February of 2016. And they had gone to New Jersey in 2014. Chopek remarried in 2017. I mean, 19. Thank you. 19. The woman's name, both the second and the third wives were named Maria. So he nicknamed the third wife Maya. So when I talk about a wife in this morning, I'm usually talking about wife number 3, Maya. In 1921, after spending 7 years in this country, Chopek was about to return to Czechoslovakia with wife Maya to start a Unitarian movement there in his home country. Leaving the United States meant leaving their adult children behind, which of course made both parents sad. Chopek remarked that he was so sorry to leave his grown children, with whom I have so happily lived all their lives. Chopek took the most amazing spiritual journey, as I said. Music was an important part of that journey. Chopik was born on June 3rd, so happy birthday, 1870 to Joseph and Marie Chopik. They were very poor. Norbert was their only child. As I said to the children, his mother was Roman Catholic, so she tried to raise Chopik as a Catholic, but Norbert was much more interested in the Church of the Moravian Brethren. The Brethren believed, and I don't know how much you know about them, they were founded in the early 1400s. They believed in nonviolent resistance to evil, that Christian practice is more important than theology, that reform of the church, especially of clergy prerogatives and behavior, was urgently called for. Chopik's father, Joseph, was not fond of the Catholics at all. When Chopik was an altar boy, he saw several disturbing things. Oh, once a priest was demanding more kickback money for doing a funeral service. Once another priest beat a student who did not know the Good Samaritan story. These are kids. These are like, you know, 10, 11, 12 and under. When Chopik was 12, he was sent to Vienna, Austria, to continue his education, which would be to train to be a tailor. So he's training with his uncle in Vienna, the center of the Habsburg Empire. He was appalled, and he's only 12, by the anti-Semitism there. This is 1882. The Habsburg Empire was trying to erase all traces of Jewish life. It was during this time period that Chopik became bilingual. He frequented the many, many used bookstores in Vienna. The adults in his life decided to end his any kind of formal education, and he would concentrate on being an apprentice to his uncle as a tailor. But that Chopik wasn't going to do that. He read and he read, and as I said, among other things, he met a Lutheran minister, became good friends with the Lutherans, and at one point the Lutheran minister pointed him to the Baptists because his theology sounded more Baptist than anything else. So Chopik was baptized by the Baptists in 1888, and then he was sent to Hungary as a missionary. And that's where he became known as a dangerous heretic for passing out Bibles, but they were the wrong kind of Bibles. He was arrested in 1889, so he was born in 1870, he's still not very old here. But also in this time period, he started a Baptist church. So he's barely 20. In 1890, he went to Hamburg to attend a Baptist college and divinity school. Two life-changing things happened to him there. He had, in the words of Richard Henry, a radical disturbance of his previous orthodoxy. I like to think that's what we do in here sometimes. A radical disturbance of his previous orthodoxy. The second thing that happened was Chopik met professor and studied with Walter Rauschenbusch. That might sound familiar to the sociologists out there, who was a visiting professor from Rochester Theological Seminary in New York. And I never can say his name correctly. Rauschenbusch was the creator, with others, of the founder of the social gospel. Some of you may have heard of that. The social gospel called for, okay, we're only in the late 1880s. An economic as well as a moral revolution as prerequisites for social justice. We're certainly slow learners, aren't we? We humans. Rauschenbusch maintained that capitalism was inhuman and anti-Christian, and that it was hard to imagine any other system that would cause more injustice, more physical suffering, and more heartache than the Industrial Revolution by which capitalism rose to power. And one of the main points of the social gospel was the belief that we must create heaven on earth because we don't know what, if anything, happens next. We should be concerned with right here. Chopik believed that we also must work for, these are his words, world patriotism, world religion, way ahead of his time. Chopik believed in the perfection of humankind, and he kept questioning that Baptist faith and wondering if that would lead him to his goals, and finally decided, nope. But he didn't know where to find a faith tradition, didn't know about Unitarians. However, a friend of his did, that future president of Czechoslovakia, Thomas Masaryk. Eventually, Masaryk is able to put Čapek in touch with the Charles Wendel. I don't expect you to know that name, but at this time, he was secretary of the AUA, the American Unitarian Association, which was a predecessor to the UUA. The AUA would not give Čapek money, though, when eventually he asked for money between the two world wars to start a Unitarian church, and initially the AUA said no. And Masaryk commented, "The Unitarian Church is like a mother unwilling to nurse her own children." There's still a little truth in that. Warned that he might be put in jail in 1914, because remember the Habsburg rulers thought he was dangerous, Čapek accepted that position at a Baptist church in New Jersey. And then the oddest thing happened. In June of 1915, Norbert Čapek was charged with heresy and went to trial in this country. It was an ecclesiastical court, but still, for that crime. Apparently, he was not orthodox enough, as clearly shown by his interest in so many heretical subjects, such as phrenology and psychology. The charges were eventually dropped, and Čapek was once again accepted as minister in good standing with the Baptists, but I think, you know, he kind of had it with the Baptists by then. So he left that church in September of 1919. Throughout his spiritual journey, Čapek always drew on the roots of the Czech religion, especially that religion from the Reformation period. Čapek was asking questions like, who's controlling the economic decisions that will determine the country's future financial stability? Again, this is the influence of Rauschenbusch and the social gospel people. Whose interests are being served by such trade? Čapek returned to Czechoslovakia and started building a movement. Within a few weeks, this is 1921, after starting to have Sunday services in rented space, crowds were waiting outside in the snow and then standing after that long wait in line for the hour-long service. His wife, Maya, reported that several people in Prague said to her, "I have seen many a line for food, for shoes, and other things during the war." It would be World War I, but I've never seen a church line. There were those, however, in Prague who felt that the Unitarian services were punctuated rather too frequently with hearty laughter from the congregation, considered unseemly behavior for religious observance. But that Unitarian church just kept growing. And one thing that I think we often overlook when we're telling about our history is the Unitarian churches in other cities in Czechoslovakia also flourished during this time period. And, you know, and I've often wondered, how did this grow to be 10,000 members? Well, part of it was, of course, Čapek's charisma. But I bet a lot of you don't know that right after World War I, really, 1 million Czechs left the Roman Catholic Church. They were so disgruntled and unhappy with the church and the way the world was going. There was a very real spiritual crisis happening in that part of the world. So I'm sure that helped. That's a lot of recovering Catholics to bring into Unitarian churches. I should tell you that when Čapek used the word religion, one of the things he meant when he used that word was this: the purpose of religion is to celebrate and honor the sacredness of the gift of life. So this then is the period when Čapek had the first flower festival. He was also a strong backer of religious education, not only for young people, but his church became what I call a full service church. They had a lot of adult education classes. They had a kitchen. They had that served people. They had a food pantry, or what we would call a food pantry. The emphasis was on the whole person. They even had a vegetarian restaurant on the premises. Obviously, they're not in the rental space anymore. They've gone out into. In Čapek's words, the first object of a person's religion was his or her own sense of worth, and everything they did there was to support that. The AUA becomes more supportive now that they see this church growing to be so huge. And of course, as that is happening with the Unitarians, things are getting scarier and scarier in Europe, and it's more and more dangerous to hold so-called heretical views. In February of 1939, Maya Chalpek came back to this country to go on a lecture tour and to raise money for Czechoslovakia. And she would not return until after World War II had ended. And she would not know what had happened to her husband either for many, many months. This is also, some of you will wonder, yes, this is also the period when the Sharps, Wait Still and Martha, thank you, went. Martha was going to Czechoslovakia and Eastern Europe while Maya Chopek was on her way to New York. I mean, I think literally the ships almost passed. The American Unitarian Association did recognize finally how dire things were becoming in Europe, and they offered the Chopeks and the Haspels. One of the Chopek daughters had married a Haspel, which of course Lee Haspel, our Lee. They offered them safe passage. They offered to write letters to get them to this country. They offered them positions here. They refused. The Chopeks and the Haspels, they all refused. I suspect they had the wrong idea. In hindsight, it's easy to say this, that things couldn't get any worse. By 1940, Unitarian services were under surveillance by the Gestapo. Imagine that, if you can, being watched by the Gestapo as you enter and leave a supposedly safe place. In June of that year, Chopek had his 70th birthday, big celebration. And one of his gifts from the Board of Trustees, no less, was a radio. You know, if they wanted to get rid of the man, they could have just told him. Listening to foreign broadcasts was an offense punishable by death. What was that board thinking? In October of that year, 1940, Chopek was summoned to appear before the Gestapo. His response was this: anyone who is worth anything at all is either in jail or called for interrogation by the Gestapo. I'd have been ashamed if they'd not called me. But he was released after just 1 hour, and he told his staff, they really welcomed me nicely. This man had a very dry sense of humor. And they liked me so much, they almost kept me there. The next level of anxiety, it's ratcheted up now. Church attendees would not only be, this was Unitarian Church, and there were some others too, not only watched, they had to be okayed by the SS before, when they were going to church. They had to show us a special card. But the attendance remained very high. And then one of Chopek's daughters, Zora, made a horrible blunder. She told a supposed friend about something she and her father had heard on a BBC broadcast. The friend asked Zora if she would type it up. And Zora did. Hindsight's great. Shortly thereafter, on March 28th of 1941, Chopek's home was invaded and it was ransacked. And that same day, Zora and Norbert were arrested. He was first held in Pankrac prison in Prague. Zora was later sent to Dresden prison. Norbert to a prison 150 kilometers from Prague. There were lawyers hired. The first one was a fraud, and there was a mock trial in May of 1941. The family found a better lawyer, and charges of treason, among other things, were appealed. On April 1st, 1942, Chopek was found not guilty of treason, but he was found guilty of listening to the radio. It was a one-year sentence, but he'd already served 11 months. His family, happy, happy, everybody's happy, because of the remarkable leniency shown by the SS court, and he would be released in 1 month. But that's not the end of this story. On May 27, 1942, the Czechoslovakian underground and government in exile successfully carried out their plot to assassinate Reinhard Heydrich, also known as the Butcher of Prague. Immediately after that assassination, Hitler ordered that 10,000 Czechs on the official blacklist be arrested. Most of those people were killed. Then Hitler ordered the entire village of Lidice be wiped out for supporting and assisting in the assassination plot, though the villagers had not been a part of the plot. And then villagers in another town were murdered. Well, unfortunately, Norbert Chopek got caught up in all of this vengeance, as were many other prisoners. Chopek was sent to Dachau, arriving on July 5th, 1942. He did 3.5 months of hard labor. He was 72 by now. He survived 14 weeks. While there, he saved many lives, both through his attitude and his actions and his optimism. Norbert Chopek died on October 12th, 1942, at Hartheim Castle near Linz, L-I-N-Z, Austria. In his book, Richard Henry says that Chopek was gassed. Lee Haspel says his grandfather died from being a human guinea pig and from the injections he received. I don't think it really matters anymore, anyway. But what matters is that we keep the memory of this remarkable man alive, Norbert Fabian Chopek, and that we continue to celebrate the Flower Festival. What matters is giving the next generation hope. The choir will sing about this in a few minutes. And what matters is showing our young people what hope and joy look like, that we're not always doing intellectual things, and how important hope and joy can be in our lives. And now we're going to enter into a few moments of not silence, but possibly chaos, because I can't think of a good way to pass the flowers so you can share them. So I don't know if you just want to come up and get flowers, do a Presbyterian thing, and you could come up row by row, and we could appoint ushers and the whole bit. So I don't know if any of you brought flowers, but don't take your own flower home if you did bring flowers. So what's your pleasure? Well, and I don't think we, I mean, there's not a whole lot to respond to what I said to this morning, so we'll skip that.
Congregation,
respond. Row by row. All right. Row by row. Da da da. Da 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 da. All right. So first row, come on up and get flowers. Mary, if you want to noodle on the piano, that's fine. But I don't have spots. Wrapped around each other. And yes, I did do the farmer's market thing again, which meant I walked around half of the square carrying most of these flowers. Keep it. I'll trust you to know when it's your turn to go. I'm going to repeat what Chopek said. I said this to the children. We have made a new experiment in symbolizing our liberty and brotherhood in this service, which was powerful, so powerful and impressive, I never experienced anything like it. So look at your flower carefully and consider its power. Please take more than one, maybe. The back rows can probably take more than one. Flowers are meant to symbolize liberty and brotherhood, which I guess we could call a ritual for metaphor for life. Chopek writes, in this holy resolve, may we be strengthened, this sharing of the flowers, knowing that we are all part of one family, that one spirit, the spirit of love, unites us, and endeavor for a more perfect and more joyful life. The closing words were written by Pat Guyton, and they were sung by the choir in the prelude. Bring your mind to the fragile possibility of global compassion and equity, that the weight of our numbers might summon that world from all the possible worlds there be. Bring your mind. Bring your mind. May it be so. Go in peace. Take flowers. Buy bread. Greet your neighbor. Lots to do. Okay.